Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the big news, Chuck Schumer, evidently he's claiming he's found the workaround. He has found the answer. Evidently the Senate parliamentarian has given him the ability to sidestep the filibuster again in 2020. I'm guessing how this is supposed to work is they're just going to amend the American Rescue Plan. Is that kind of the thought? Or are they going to amend the infrastructure bill? I don't know. I'm here to share some thoughts on how this might work and some other top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend, former Congressman Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So am I getting this right, this workaround kind of thing that they've decided with the parliamentarian?
Right. What's happened is the Senate parliamentarian, who you remember about 3 weeks ago, they were kind of angry at him because he made a couple of rulings. But this time the Senate parliamentarian has ruled that the Democratic side can use budgetary rules. These will be special rules to avoid the Republicans starting a filibuster on two more pieces of legislation. So that allows the infrastructure agenda to pass in two packages with simple majority votes. So there'll be two different packages that they'll vote on. And that allows then Schumer to pass, if he wants, if he's got the votes lined up on his side, because he won't have any Republicans, unless they alter the package, but I doubt that, then he would have a $2.25 trillion package, and he would revise what they're calling, Rick, the fiscal 2021 budget resolution. That's what kicks in to allow for a simple majority rule, because it then becomes a budget resolution, which kicks in under what they call reconciliation.
Right. But so is this amending one that's already existed or the next one?
No, what this will do, he'll do an actual third, this is Schumer when I say he, will do an actual third reconciliation package.
Okay.
That's what he's going to do for the second half of the Biden infrastructure agenda.
So if he can do a second one.
Revise it a third time.
Okay, so if he can do it a third time, can he do it a fourth and fifth?
Well, as long as they, I would assume, I'm not a Senate parliamentarian, but as long as they can do budget revisions, if they can do budget revisions, this should be a way that they can do it. They can do a revised budget resolution, and then that can contain reconciliation, what they call instructions. So this will be basically Schumer's interpretation of the Budget Act. And then that will allow the Democrats a little bit of a leeway in case the Republicans want to, you know, obstruct the bill.
So what's the benefit of doing this in two pieces? Because it seems to me like, you know, if you want to get, you know, some of your more progressive stuff in there, some of your more visionary, you know, high-minded kind of stuff in there, you want to put it in there with the basic roads and bridges, because I can see a moment where they go, no, we're just paving roads, nothing with houses or pipes, like the South Dakota governor thinks that infrastructure isn't. And then, you know, anything dealing with climate change, anything dealing with transit, that gets nothing. So do you see something like that possibly happening?
Well, yes, you know, usually the House and the Senate advance one reconciliation package in a fiscal year budget. That's
right.
Normally what they do. And so what they're doing is they're just passing additional reconciliation, you know, figures. Now, if they would break apart the Biden proposal, right now, if you look at the Biden plan, Rick, as you know, it's broken into four parts. You've got your infrastructure, which we, you know, normally say your roads, your bridges, your Amtrak, your you know, miscellaneous projects,
your physical
public
stuff,
right? And then the second part, you've got quality of life, what they're calling quality of life at home. That would be school buildings, underground water infrastructure, broadband, you know, et cetera. Part number three is caregivers for elderly and people with disabilities. Now that would be affordable home or community-based care, and it could expand, you know, certain programs, improved communities, and the fourth part is research, development, and manufacturing. Now, obviously, they're not going to want to split these into four parts and then attempt every time to have a budget maneuver called budget reconciliation, which avoids the filibuster. So they're going to have to put them all together, I would assume. You wouldn't want to keep tempting the system, although I think they should do away with the filibuster personally, but you don't want to keep pushing the system and have the parliamentarian go against it. So if they put this into the budget process, all of these four pieces, then they'll have a package that, yes, the progressives would want more, but they'll be at least satisfied with this. The Republicans would want to split this package apart, obviously, into four different parts. That would make it a little bit more difficult, I think, to do without a filibuster to do it.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But, the fact that Joe Manchin's coming out and saying, we're not going to raise taxes above, 25%. He seems to think there are six or seven other senators that aren't happy with the infrastructure plan, which, kind of goes, if you don't get this done, if this doesn't happen, 2022 is going to be a bad year.
Well, this is the major piece of legislation beyond, obviously, the stimulus plan. Again, there's, what the president has to do on the vaccinations to continue that process,
right.
Because we're starting to see light of day, although there was arguments on Sunday by experts of are we or aren't we, dealing with the surge. But basically, the vaccination program has to continue. And then there was the stimulus package, which was, a number one priority. And then this is the economic side in multiple ways. If this doesn't make it, the Democrats can argue all they want that, the Republicans obstructed it, which would be true. It still would not be good for them.
Nope. No,
they have to pass, especially infrastructure. They have to pass it.
Got to get this done. Now, I found it interesting, this John Gizzi guy who works for Newsmax, a reporter, asked Jen Psaki about the math in the infrastructure bill. I don't know if you saw this. But he's floating the idea that evidently he claims there's a secret memo. A private memo, he said, that's being circulated in the business community and to some Republican senators that said that the $2.25 trillion price tag is $1 trillion off. And he said that that's many things in there that were omitted in the initial discussion on the bill. Is it possible to miss by $1 trillion and then to go back, Biden, just decide not to put stuff in there?
No, you can't miss it by $1 trillion. Nothing is perfect in the budgetary process. There might be, what they call out years when they put this together and they try to calculate, regular budget processes. They can be off. I highly doubt, however, that it would be $1 trillion. Now, Gizzi referred to, the private memo. This is kind of sort of like a conspiracy theory deal, private memo, and that there's this price tag, $1 trillion off. And then there were things that they took out. They omitted it in the initial discussion of the bill, and basically they're kind of putting it back in and then lowballing the price. And I just don't think that is possible. Again, nothing's perfect in budgetary numbers, but to have it $1 trillion off, no. And if somebody circulated that memo and he's talking about it, John Gizzi is, then it would have actually surfaced by now in its form, which it hasn't.
I love the conspiracy stuff. Got to throw that out there because you need something. Look, and this is one of the weird moments because I was just having this conversation today. This job is a lot harder without Donald Trump. And if you can't make up a crisis, if you can't make up a good conspiracy, a good secret memo thing, what are you going to talk about and inflame people about? I think a lot of people are missing Trump.
Right. And the press secretary for the president, dismissed it pretty quick.
Yeah, she did a good job on that.
Right.
Let's move on. Today, Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, talked about a global minimum tax rate. I've been saying for a very long time that we need another Bretton Woods kind of moment where we go back and we undo a lot of the damage, conservatism and neoliberalism have done to our trade and our tax policies. Do you see a possibility of there being a minimum tax globally?
Well, I found this fascinating, and you're right. Bretton Woods with the gold standard is a very, historic move years ago, and it actually worked, to set a tone for the worldwide process. Now, in her first, major address, she is arguing that there ought to be a global minimal corporation tax rate. And, of course, you've got offshore accounts. Now, offshore accounts in their own are not necessarily illegal, but you have to claim you have one. But then after that process, as you know, Rick, then you can't find out what's there and how much is really in there. It's just like Swiss bank accounts.
Right.
To put it in a better term people could understand versus offshore, like a Swiss bank account type of deal. And Switzerland, rules that, just like the offshore accounts in the Caribbean. And I don't know what incentive it would be for those countries that do the offshore, but in a much improved world, if you could get this, it would stop the, as they call it, the process to the bottom. And it would definitely help. They could have a global minimum tax to make sure that the global economy, the whole thing, is on a more, let's say, level playing field for multinational corporations and their tax. And that, in turn, would help, as this is all quotes from Yellen, by the way, is what I'm saying, and that would help growth and prosperity. So it's a great theory. If they can, get the world moving on it, it would definitely be a better place.
No, we need to stop the race to the bottom, and there's got to be some redistributive policy because our global wealth class is getting too large and powerful, in my view, and it's not healthy to have, a small amount of people controlling the kind of wealth around this globe that they do, because ultimately, we're then dependent on them. I mean, I look at the fact that we got a handful of people in this country who decide, kind of where our politics goes, and that is a dangerous thing. So for me, going back and undoing some of the damage, not a bad idea. And if you go back and you read about the Bretton Woods Accord, one of the ideas that they came out with, and Keynes's ideas, was to have a global basket of currencies. And they were going to go to something called a bancor, which would have been a global currency, and everyone would trade off that. And countries that had a trade surplus would pay countries that had a trade deficit, so that you had a balance of trade, so that you would penalize people who were doing too well, and it would be at a benefit to people who were being punished. I mean, we're getting our hats handed to us in trade. There's got to be something to level that out a little bit.
Well, it is. And also, when you look at this, I mean, there are places now on the globe that basically a multinational corporation comes in and they mortgage the places, mortgage their natural resources just to get that company in, and they really don't benefit in the long term with it.
No, I mean, I look at some of the
locals that try to do stadiums, in the United States. Do you really benefit?
No, I look at, there was a great documentary on Bolivia when Bolivia sold their water off to Halliburton. And, just the horror story that privatization had done. You couldn't even put out a bucket to catch rainwater. They were cracking down that much. And the price of water went up like 300%. It was crazy. But it's what happens when you hand things over to corporate interests. And we shouldn't be surprised by it.
And she's trying to, bring the world powers into the fold, because it will help everybody. She also called for $650 billion in what's called new special drawing rights, which the Trump administration was, very skeptical of. And so that will give lines of credit at the International Monetary Fund, and that can help developing countries, access more U.S. dollars. So it doesn't hurt us.
No.
It helps us.
Because I think, and I talked about this at the beginning. I mean, we're at the beginning of we're in the middle of a Cold War, but it's not about bombs. It's not about tanks. It's not about giant ships. It's about who's going to dominate the future in technology. Who's going to have the advantage in robotics, aeronautics, pharmaceuticals? China is going full tilt boogie on being the dominant force, and we're still mired in this kind of this fighting of, hey, can we get the road out front of my house paved? Hey, can we fill that pothole down the road? Can we get better broadband access? I mean, we're literally, as Biden said, we're literally getting our lunch eaten.
Well, we are. And also, I mean, look at India alone. Until the COVID, I traveled there twice a year. Over 1.2 billion people. They are a democracy. they like us. They really do like us, and we really don't do much towards them in the sense that, you know, Russia tries, China tries to court them, and so we've got to put on our thinking caps a lot more than we do and access and engage. Sometimes we get upset with the country and we immediately throw the sanction word all over the place. You know, we're going to sanction you. We don't like what you said or something of that nature. Instead, China goes in and tries to cut economic deals.
Yep.
And so it's not just China, but, you know, you're right. It's kind of a general Cold War, and we're going to be on the outside of it if we don't engage.
And this is where I come back to this infrastructure plan. If we don't invest in this country and invest in research and development and invest in human capital, if we don't do this now, we're going to be that much further behind because China's been doing it all along. And I use this quote all the time. You know, it was about 10 years ago, I think, you know, Thomas Friedman said that, you know, he'd gone from Beijing to LAX, and it was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. And, you know, that was 10 years ago. Think about how much more of the Flintstones we've become.
Right. And China has been, you know, advancing. It's been doing everything it can, you know, internally, but also externally. And for us, we've become, with infrastructure, we've become, what I always like to say, we've become shabby. And it's time to, you know, lift it up and improve it. I mean, we had a great system ahead of the world at one point in time.
Yeah.
And it's becoming shabby. It needs to have a lift up.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, doing private public partnerships where we spend a whole bunch of public money to enrich the private sector to do shoddy work has put us in kind of a bad spot as well. Finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, the we're in this weird kind of spot. I'm looking for the Capitol Police story. Because, you know, we had another attack on the Capitol. A police officer was killed. You know, there's talk of, you know, we need to be cracking down on domestic terrorism and these extremists. You know, do we know what the guy, do we have any insight into why the attack happened Friday?
I haven't found anything in the news. Of course, you know, he was shot. But I have not found anything in the news. I know there's a morale problem after this, you know, again, continuing problem. And there's also going to be police officers are going to be eligible to retire. But it's not just the amount of officers. It's also the structure of the Capitol Hill Police. I mean, it was something dear to my heart. I was, you know, I oversaw it. When I chaired House Administration, and first with Steny Hoyer and then John Larson were the ranking members, and we put a lot of time and effort because we had the initial 911 and then the ricin and the anthrax, and now they have a whole series of other things we didn't deal with, but there's still, you know, emergencies that have happened, bad things that have happened, and they're going to have to, you know, retool their thinking. You just can't put one great big fence up, but I don't know the motive, you know, of the attacker, but obviously he, you know, went at them at the barricades. So, I mean, they're going to have to try to put their ideas together to see how they can, you know, protect, obviously, the officers in the Capitol complex.
So tragic. Just so it tragic.
It's bizarre. I mean, and again, I don't know, you know, why he did it or if he was just angry at them or angry at the government or what, but obviously they'll eventually find out, but they're going to have to expand the force in certain areas, but they're also going to have to, I think, use electronic upgrades and electronic security also to help them, you know, down the road.
We're moving down that path.
We have to.
And, you know, cameras everywhere, electronic surveillance everywhere, checkpoints everywhere, all because we've got, you know, a small percentage of nitwits and nimrods who do horrible things.
Sure, and it's terrible. And the one thing, it's the people's house. They still have to keep it, you know, open. They can't close it. It eventually has to be there, you know, for the kids, the school tours, the constituents. Otherwise, guess what? if people can't go in and out, boy, the lobbyists really will rule, won't they?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's right. That's somewhere where my mind didn't even go there.
Right.
Jeez. Scary stuff. But, Bob, I appreciate the time, as always. Good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. You know, you lock the place down, the lobbyists have full access. The rats run wild. Scary stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.